Hey everyone, welcome to the Genuine Evaluation Podcast again. This is number two in a series of four. My name's Jane Davidson, and I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Stephanie Evergreen when she came out to keynote for the Aotearoa New Zealand Evaluation Association Conference in July 2014. In this piece of the podcast, Stephanie and I are talking about awesome reporting. What does that look like? What does it look like when you've got reporting that really gets to the point and conveys it brilliantly? Listen in and enjoy. We've got four in the series of podcasts. This is number two, so there's two more to come. Enjoy.
Well, I mean, I guess one of the things I try and grapple with a lot is like the whole mixed method space.
Yeah.
And how to transform mixed methods into something that's not just both methods. Because how many times have you seen an evaluation report that's written like a master's thesis?
Yeah.
So it's like, first of all, it's painful.
Yeah.
So, like, here's the introduction and literature review.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you suffer through the literature review because I had to sweat blood in the library to, like, get that damn thing together, you know? I mean, yeah. I hated it. But I'll make you suffer through it.
Yeah.
And then, like, we'll lay out the methods and, like, our measures and everything, and then we'll put the results. But here's the thing. The results section goes like this. First section, quantitative results. Next section, qualitative results. And in the quantitative results, it's like, here's the survey of the participants. Here's the survey of the supervisors, or like, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like each instrument is reported back separately.
Yeah.
This drives me crazy,
oh, it's
man.
Terrible.
Because like I'm looking through and thinking like, okay, there's a key, like let's say there's a key outcome you need to report on. The participants have got something to say about it. The people who, like, supervised or observed have got something to say about it. There's something in your direct observations that's about it, you know. And then there's the whole, like, pulling it together into, like, and is that any good?
Right.
So, but somehow the way we were taught to write a master's thesis is, like, all completely disaggregated into its bits because you're not allowed to weave and you're not allowed to kind of comment on things evaluatively as you interpret them.
Yeah.
And so you end up with this, like, multiple different sections, and half the time they're never woven together. Not half the time. 90% of the time they're not woven together at the end.
Yeah, I heard somebody tell me recently, I forgot who said this, but it was something like, we allocate the proportion of our talk or a paper to adequately represent the amount of time we spent on that portion of the study.
Right.
So because you spent 6 months in literature review, that literature review is going to take up a good 25 pages of your report, you know, because you have to show something for all that hard work you put into it.
Right.
I think the other issue is that people struggle with the reporting phase. Like, there's never enough time. They're analyzing, and the report's due, like, in 3 days. And so people end up writing while they're doing that part of the work, which means that when the survey is conducted, you write up the results of the survey. When the interviews are conducted, you write up the results of the interviews. And then there's never enough time to really actually sit and think about how all of those things fit together.
Well, that's one of the reasons why. Like, one of the things I try and teach in workshops and also coaching clients is around structuring reports, especially, not by data source or whatever, but like by evaluation question. Here's your evaluation question number one, which might be, you know, do we get the whole design right? Does it even address a need that exists? Are we addressing the right underlying causes? It might be something like that.
Yeah.
And to say that when you're putting together your different pieces of data collection, you know, and the evidence that's going to come into there, you know exactly where that's going, what the home and the report is going to be, where that's going to be. So I quite often get people to write a skeleton report up front. So you've got, I quite often set it up with like 7 ± 2 big picture questions you're trying to answer for the evaluation. And every time you collect some data, you know exactly where that's going to go. So,
and
you weave it together under the section that's for that pertains to that question.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether it came from like a survey of this or an interview for that or an observation or whatever. That's, if it's to do with that topic, it goes right there and you weave it together right there on the spot.
Yeah. And the best reports that I've seen and the ones that I've written where I'm most satisfied
are the ones where that's exactly how it's organized. Like, here's the question in a really big font.
Yeah.
Here's the answer in really big font. Yeah. And then there are a couple paragraphs of explanation, you know, maybe a viz that helps illustrate that point. Mm-hmm. But then you actually get to see the question and the answer.
Yeah.
Whereas the worst reports, those ones that you were just describing, you get to the results section and they see something like, and so for question one, blah, 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 and you never actually, you never see what question one was. You're expected to go flip back to like somewhere in the early 50 or pages to find what question one was. Like, the worst.
Yeah. Well, or there's never actually an answer given to it. It's just like free associate with data.
Sure.
You know, throw whatever at it.
Yeah.
And then, but I can't tell you how many, I mean, I've had several cases where I get clients asking me to review reports that have been done by other contractors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's hilarious, like there was an interesting session in the recent ANSIA conference from Heather Nuns, who was talking about how in a bunch of reports that she reviewed, about half of the primary report authors clearly did not identify professionally as evaluators because they were not members of ANSIA, AES, AEA, or like any known evaluation association whatsoever. So these were basically management consultants or researchers who think they can slap the word evaluation on the front of a report and that's what it's going to be.
And it's not the same thing.
Yeah. So no wonder they don't get evaluative answers because they don't actually understand evaluation-specific methodology or the whole kind of how we reason this stuff.
Yeah, and I think even for trained evaluators, coming to pull a bunch of methods and a bunch of different data sources together into some clear summative answers, some overall judgment is such a challenge. It's really hard for people. And so I try to help folks figure out how to communicate that by using icons. And this is something I've used successfully and seen other people use pretty successfully too. And I'm thinking, it was actually Michael Scriven, I think, who originally told me about this, the consumer reports icons, you know, where you can give one symbol, one quick visual symbol that shows, like, met, partially met, or not met, or, you know, corresponding to whatever your judgment degrees are going to be. But that's what people really want. That's what people really pay us to do, is to tell them, how are we actually performing on this?
Yeah. Now, I can't remember if this was something I heard from someone you said once upon a time or somebody else, but something about some of the things that we might evaluate when we're looking at a policy or program, some things are more important than others. And there was something like using chili peppers to say, like, how hot it was, how important it was. Was that you?
Yeah, I was saying,
I love that. I love chili peppers anyway. But
well,
you know,
that's like from Rate My Professor, right? Like, hot is my professor? It's the number of chili peppers. But I've used that same sort of thinking in my evaluation reports when my clients, when we have a lot of different data sources, and my clients say, like, well, you know, we're not actually super confident in, say, that survey and how that survey was collected. So we want to be able to say what the survey told us, but we also want to be able to adequately show that we're not completely confident. So in the little sidebar, we'll have a strength of evidence.
I like it.
A little graphic that's like 4 out of 5 bars will be filled, you know, or 2 out of 5 bars will be filled. And that way, the people who are, you know, the researchers feel fair and that they've told the truth about their data.
Yeah.
And any of the data nerds who read it will feel like, you know, they're being transparent.
Right. So 5 chili peppers, you're like saying, basically, I bet my life on it.
Yes, that's right.
And you know what? I remember, like, Michael Scriven had a great definition. I remember one. I went to one of his courses once called Hardcore Qualitative Methods.
Mm.
And I remember him saying something like, robust evidence. Robust means strong enough you could bet your life on the conclusion.
Mm.
So I'm thinking 5 chili peppers, bet your life
that's
on it.
That's right.
But down at 1 or 2,
yeah.
Look, it's a rough answer. It's a best rough answer to the important question. But it's maybe not a slam dunk, but it's the best answer.
It's what we can do right now, exactly. And one of the other things I think that helps amazing report writing that I talk about in my workshops, especially pointing them to you, and the article that you wrote, on learning our social science habits.
I don't know why that's got so much heat on.
Because I
really
talk about it all the time. Yeah. I talk about it all the time. It was one of the articles, I think it hit me at the right time when I was thinking about these things, like looking for a dissertation topic, feeling frustrated by bad pre-evaluation presentations, and thinking that, none of this is really all that engaging when I read it, and I hate writing it, and it's awful. And then I read your article on unlearning our social science habits, and I was like, oh, hallelujah. Let's
all right.
Save people. Let's give them what they want when they want it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was I guess, a product of a lot of frustration for me, too.
Yeah.
That, you know, and it wasn't just in graduate school, like going through the doctorate or anything like that, but I remember I did my master's here in New Zealand, and I remember, like, during that time I had, you know, we'd learn, and even in the master's program, that the best way to get something across to managers is a 2-page bullet point summary. You know,
right.
You should never go any longer for that.
Yeah.
Senior managers, a 1-page bullet point summary. And for the CEO, a cartoon. So I'd like, and I remember, like, dutifully putting together this, like, 1-page or 2-page bullet point summary for my immediate manager. And she'd look at it and she said, which bit should I read? I'm like, oh. And I mean, I kind of, on the one hand, I thought, like, I've actually got a bit to learn, but, like, I later realized I had quite a lot to unlearn because my mind had been polluted by this very academic approach to report writing.
Yeah.
And although I was trying not to, and that, I mean, it was a bullet point summary, for goodness sake, but I totally hadn't got it. And I mean, I had no idea about dataism. I mean, that
oh yeah.
If you could whip up a graph, you were like, you know, that was just pure genius. So I mean, gosh, we've come a long way since then.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I remember not too long ago in my life producing executive summaries that were like 4, 5, 6 pages. I mean, how is that anything summary at all?
One second, please name the executive who's actually going to read that.
No, nobody.
I mean, like, trying to get something across to an executive is like trying to flap a piece of paper in front of their face while they're screaming past on a motorbike.
Right, exactly.
That's how much time you've got.
Yeah.
Like, can you grab their attention?
That's why visuals. That's why we have to go visuals.
Well, they need the cartoon.
Or the graph.
Or the graph. But I mean, what I mean is, like, they actually need the picture. They can't, like, words just glaze them over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so what I've been advocating for is replacing all the text with a big graph.
Mm-hmm.
A big graph. I mean, that's one of the mistakes I see in reports, too, is that they have graphs, but they're so itty-bitty in the corner that you can't even tell what's going on, and then they try to add in a little bit of, like, an axis label or something, and it becomes so cluttered you can't even see it. So I advocate for making those much, much bigger, and then actually replacing the narrative that explains it with inside the graph. Like, instead of a generic graph title, we actually take the summary sentence, the point of the graph, and make that the title, and just eliminate it from the narrative altogether.
And I love that. So, I mean, I would, you know, I'd listen to your stuff, and now I'm trying to write my graph titles like newspaper headlines.
Yeah, exactly.
The scoop.
Because it's what people are going to look at first.
Yeah.
And then if they're really interested, they'll keep reading the rest of the narrative. But we write.
Mm-hmm.
As we, on our end, we write thinking, well, people will read this narrative first and then look at the graph second, but that's just not how the world works.
And I mean, that was, remember at the conference in your keynote, one of my clients and colleagues and friends, Matilda Taiawa, stood up and said, well, she was talking about this report that we did for Te Puni Kōkiri, the Ministry of Māori Development. It was actually like, it was around for New Zealand Māori tourism. And one of the things that we kept noticing was, like, when we'd write stuff up, like, people would, like, skim the writing, like, and just look at the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, we just sat there and said, what the hell? That's just a report that's pretty much all pictures.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, make the graph, but, like, put the messages in the graph, right there, or, like, draw pictures. So, and we just did it all, like, mini newspaper headlines, the whole thing.
Beautiful.
I'll just show you this.
I would love
fun.
To see it.
It's really fun.
There you go.
We had a blast
with it. See, this is what I'm talking about. I come down here to New Zealand and everybody's already doing all the things that I want you to do. So.
I know, but we want more of your cool tips. We're not satisfied. You know?
Oh, it's really cool to see. Yeah.
It's fun.
You're already doing a lot of the stuff. I was just looking at an infographic that somebody sent me after After I did the keynote, somebody was like bragging, and I was like, oh my God, send me that link. It's this beautiful report. I think it's another government division.
Yes.
And they introduced icons in the first few pages. It was just so beautifully done. Like, they had a graphic designer make the icons, and then they repeated those icons throughout the report. So it was just a really quick, like, way to show where you're at in the report navigation while you're going through. I've seen other people do something similar where, you know, they'll have, like, colored tabs at the top that tell you which chapter you're in, and then it changes on every page, and it's just, like, kind of changes when you go through. So you can actually get to section four results or whatever fast.
Yeah, exactly.
Without having to dig around too much, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen really cool stuff like that happening. Yeah. Or big, beautiful pictures on the beginning page of each new section. So that'll make it so quick to navigate around.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, I'm so stoked to lecturers just kind of push some of my stuff in that direction, but, you know, kind of around that idea of, you know, the whole way that I like to structure the work is to say, like, what are the big picture questions we're trying to ask? And then, bang, just whack the answers in there straight up front. But what I love is being able to whack the answers in there as pictures.
Mm, cool.
So, you know, it's even more direct. So, I mean, you know, my ideal, you know, the dream executive summary to me is, like, two pages picture heavy.
Yeah.
Where you've got seven little headings in the executive summary, and each heading is one of your evaluation questions, one of your key evaluation questions, and you've got seven big picture ones, and straight under it is the answer.
The answer, right there.
The actual answer. Yeah. And I mean, why is that such a shock?
I know. Well, I don't know, maybe some mentality where we believe because people paid us so much, we need to deliver something that's enormous.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you can deliver enormous in the appendices.
Sure.
Like, there are always detail freaks who want to see all the details.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like, that's great. But the thing is, you've got to layer the report so that, I guess the way I like to think about it is, people have only got so much attention span. They might have an attention span for one page, 2 pages, 10 pages, 15 pages. You just don't know. And, of course, the way you write it and how much, you know, how good your visuals are and everything makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the key for me is to think, whatever their attention span, wherever they stop reading, if they stop reading at 7 pages, they will have read the most important 7 pages in the entire report.
That's right.
So that's the most crucial. I like front load it. Seriously.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so what I encourage people to do now is, basically, if there's a p-value anywhere in the beginning of the report, like, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
You've gone too far to the dark side.
Yeah.
Put all of the tables and the p-values and the stats in the appendix, and because there will be a small portion of people who are nerdy enough to want to go read that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's me. Like, I want to see the questions they asked, and you know, I want to dig into that sort of thing. But, that's not what the majority of people want.
No. But the nice thing is, you know, for years and years, you've been able to use something as simple as Microsoft Word and embed those cross-references in, so you can have, like, your executive summary, like, just 2 pages up front, and that hyperlinks to your results section, which is an exact mirror of those 7 questions you're trying to answer, and it's just, like, it's all the same stuff, but now a bit more detail, and then you've got a hyperlink from there to the detail of the evidence in the appendix, so that you can, if it's electronic, you can just click and jump there, but even if it's just a paper version, you've got a cross-reference to, like, here's the page you flick to if you want to see all the details.
Mm-hmm.
So you no longer have to do this ancient art of making people suffer through your report because of the way that you suffered through creating the thing in the first place.
I mean, that's the thing. I think that in all of these ways, that's the main idea. Like, there's just no excuse to putting out stuff like that anymore.
No.
There really isn't.
No. Well, I mean, you know, clients are getting savvy about it.
Oh, they are.
That's the problem. They've started to see that there's another way that just gets straight to the point and conveys it beautifully, and that they don't, they can demand that and like not expect anything less.
And this is really what we're here to talk about, like how we can convey a point and make it beautiful.
Yeah,
I mean, and beautiful, it sounds like it's just something flippant, but actually beautiful is useful. Beautiful is engaging.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I just had a paper out very recently in the latest NDE, which is like revisiting houses truth, beauty, and justice.
Mm.
And beauty is not just let's make a pretty little evaluation report, but beauty is about the coherence of the argument mm-hmm. and how clearly the ideas are conveyed. Mm-hmm. And that's like reasoning, it's words, it's visuals, it's all of it. It's like, you know, can you get to the point and get it across mm-hmm. Succinctly? And in many ways, like the evaluation report that is not quote unquote beautiful is almost like deliberately dense as a, you know, sometimes it's almost a political move. Like you make the language inaccessible, the statistics really sophisticated and difficult to understand, and you actually, it's a way of avoiding criticism because you make sure nobody can understand it enough to take pot shots
and
at it.
You know, the thing is, it produces this feeling of stupidity in mm-hmm. readers, where they think that they're dumb because they can't understand what's being said, when actually it's because the person who wrote the report and made that graph made it terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there. It's the report, right? It's the researcher and the evaluator's mistake that produces stupidity and confusion
in the
audiences. And we actually make people feel like they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
It's awful.
It's more about the writer than it is about the reader.
It is. Yes. Yeah. So much so. So, I mean, it does take a little bit more work on our part to come to some clarity and to do the hard thinking that requires. But, gosh, that's what we're paid to do.
Yeah. Well, so, simplify without oversimplifying. That's the key, isn't it?
Right.
Like, it's like, you know, condensing things without losing the important nuances.
Yes, and that's why the bar, like, I think people got really scared, and so they went far in the other direction to infographics. That I've seen infographics done well, but so many of them are definitely oversimplified, using graph types that people can't even interpret, you know, like that's what the research says doesn't even work for folks.
Mm-hmm.
But they go that way because they're trying to make some distance from that terrible reporting, that big, thick 200-page report.
Right.
But there's a spot in the middle that is actually useful, and that's what we need to be shooting for.
Wow, that was a fun interview. Thanks, Stephanie. We loved having you here. Okay, that was, as I said, this is number 2 in a series of 4 podcasts coming out on genuine evaluation. So the first one was Stephanie talking about the New Zealand Evaluation Conference in July 2014, and she was also talking about what's new in qualitative data viz. This one you've just heard was about awesome reporting. The next 2 are still to come, so check these out. They're coming soon. One is how to go from eek to awesome. How to get expert help to totally transform your evaluation reporting. Some top tips from us. And then the final one is about workshop sessions coming up from Stephanie and myself. My name's Jane Davidson, at the European Evaluation Society Conference in Dublin and the American Evaluation Association Conference in Denver this year. And in the final one, Stephanie also gives us some little hints about why President Obama's slides need a total overhaul from the DataViz Queen. So we'll let him have that. Enjoy. Tune into the next Genuine Evaluation podcast. See you next.